Hey guys, welcome to today's episode of Target Table, and on the couch today joining us is Jade Spooner. Jade Spooner is a renowned entrepreneur in the health and fitness space, online business mentor, and won countless awards for having the number one fastest growing tech company. She's a business builder and co-founder of Equilution and Big Appetite, and is recognized as one of Forbes 30 Under 30.
Told me 8 years prior, where would be an ultimate dream? I would have said right there. When people ask me what it's like being an entrepreneur, I say, have you ever drank a Red Bull to calm down? So we met these uni kids. We paid them $10,000. They built us an app. It completely failed. And we had like no contract, nothing.
Jay, that's a hell of a lot.
What an intro.
Yeah. That's a bio and a half.
My business journey's been over a lot of years, so I feel like it's warranted given I'm 31 now and I started when I was 21. So you'd hope that I'd done a few
got
things.
Got a bit of heft to it
now. You'd hope I'd done a bit in a decade.
That's quite a lot. So for you, I mean, obviously, you know, you've been able to do quite a lot. If we go back to the beginning, like how did you, get on the trajectory through the Google company into what you're doing now? Like what's been your journey?
I think Google is a great starting point. But prior to that, both myself and my co-founder of Equilution were very much entrepreneurial in nature. So, you know, the kids with the lemonade stand, all that kind of stuff. You hear that very commonly with entrepreneurs, and we were definitely no different, which is always a good place to start. Being in Google, I guess, really opened us up to a different kind of world. You know, it was a great environment. It was probably the first exposure that I had to culture and how much a team can drive a result and, you know, sort of working for a company that was really goal oriented. And there was a lot of like foundational things that I found inspiring. But it was probably the first exposure to tech. I am a non-technical founder, but I'm hugely passionate about building technical startups and creating products out, you know, from technology. So I think that was the first exposure to that, and it was an inspiring place to be.
So just being, I guess, you know how people say you become like your environment.
Yeah,
you become 100%. A creature of your habitat.
Yeah.
What was it, I guess, like walking into Google and starting there as an employee? Because everyone has this persona that Google's this like kind of Wild West, futuristic, go get them, gun ho kind of company.
Anything goes.
Yeah, and it is a little bit. I remember the first time that I walked into the Piedmont office, which is, you know, where like Dalton House is, and it's just like on that pier there.
Yeah.
I remember the first time going to that, and there was the most like charismatic sort of front desk guy, and he had a parrot that was on like a ledge on the front desk, and then there was a big sort of like you know, the greenery walls.
A real parrot, alive
on the front desk.
Okay.
Can we get
and
a parrot?
And that's who greeted you every day as you came into the office. There was you know, yeah, there was a, like a tire hanging from the ceiling that was like a swing sort of thing, and lunch supplied every day.
Dream office from your description.
No, truthfully it was, and they were very much everything that people say that Google is, it is, and they were very much about giving back. There was really intensive training as well. So, you know, it was a real thorough process to get you ready for your job. And I think there was a huge investment in the employee. And I think that was really inspiring.
Kind of sounds like almost like the military for like tech of the future. You know what I mean? Like it's just, you can't just walk into Google. You have to go through this rigorous exercise. Did you get poached from somewhere? Did you apply? Like how did you even get
in? So my co-founder had the job first, and then she referred me to another position that came up in the company. So so we were sort of in two different fields. She was in the marketing team for their product line. So the, you know, the Google Chrome and things like that. And I sold the strategy and the marketing space for AdWords.
Okay.
So sort of two different spaces in the company, but it was a great place to be.
Exciting.
Did not last very long. So we were both there for sort of just under a year because we had created Equilution on the side as a side hustle and quit our... Actually, this weekend on Sunday, it will be the anniversary of quitting full-time job at Google and taking...
Oh, wow.
I love that you know the date too.
I do. Yeah. The 3rd of December, I will never forget it. It was 3rd of December 2014 is when we pushed off and went to Silicon Valley.
Wow. Congratulations.
I'm excited to dive into that. And I think I was in the Google office once for Chris Doe had an event there.
Yeah, cool.
And it is quite a like austere kind of like imposing kind of place because you walk around and it's like there's art and everything's kind of like high end. So like it can feel like maybe you have to,
you know, adapt yourself to that kind of corporate environment potentially?
Yeah.
Did you feel pressure when you got there to be a certain way?
You know, I felt more pressure from my remuneration package because I was commission incentivized and I actually earned more in commission than I did from my base salary.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it was probably the first environment where performance, there was a lot resting on it on the other side.
So you can kind of make your own success if in a way.
Very much so. Yeah. So your salary was X and then it could be whatever you wanted it to be basically. Mm. So I think that was the pressure that came from myself, not from the company.
Which can be fun at the same time, but also like stressful. Cause like
it was the best thing for any 20-year-old. I think when you're living at home and able to wear that stress, like absorb it all up. Mm. Yeah.
And see the results of your efforts as well.
Of course. Yeah. Like, you know, even in today's day and age, I don't know if you guys have sort of noticed this in the entrepreneurial kind of culture, but there's a lot of encouraging people to start businesses and take that plunge and whatnot. And I'm very much of that camp as well. But I also think starting in a company can give you so many fundamental skills and can sort of nurture you through an age where you might not be ready, you know, and let's be honest, like we're never really ready, but you can have readier years than others, I feel.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Readier years than others. okay, so then, so what was your friend's name that got you the job at the Google?
That was Amal, and she... She was my co-founder. She's my co-founder at Equilation.
Right. Yeah. And were you guys like childhood friends or did you just meet somehow?
We actually went to high school together and we sort of ran into each other outside of school maybe 1 to 2 years later.
Yeah.
And she'd lost a lot of weight and she said, come and train with me. And at the time I was really trying to lose weight and having no such luck. So I took her up on that offer and I went and trained with her. So we were training buddies. We did a fitness model show together. And then, you know, classic, you know, 20 something best friends, you do everything together. So so she had a job at Google. So I got a job at Google, you know,
that's one of those. Especially when you're young, right?
Yeah. And then it's just sort of developed into, you know, we lived together, we had a business together, we had dogs together, we had matching cars, you know, it was just like this.
Proper twinning.
Proper
friends.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I feel like, Emma, you and I are starting to twin a little bit at the moment.
It's really?
Kind of, yeah.
Is it you're copying my dress style
maybe. We've got similar colours today. Yeah.
Live with a cripple, learn to limp.
Oh, my goodness.
Brutal. I'm going to put that in my pocket for later.
That's a good one. That's a nice one. Paul would like that one.
He would.
Okay, so like we always look at like business in kind of two ways. There's two types of entrepreneurs, which is how I kind of look at it. It's the person who starts a business because they're really passionate about something.
Yeah.
And then the second type is like, I'm just going to start a business because I want to make money or I want to get a buyout or whatever. And there's no right or wrong, but it sounds like you're the first type of entrepreneur where you were like really passionate about a problem. And you know, for those that do like intensive training, like you do where you're trying to do like, you know, bodybuilding or anything.
It's very goal oriented. Very goal oriented. But there needs to be a passion.
And you have to be passionate about it. So like walk us through, I guess, the evolution of, you know, leaving Google to embark upon building this company because it wasn't an easy journey.
No, it definitely wasn't. But, you know, that was an 8-year journey. So I left the company in 2021, which was a really difficult decision, but it definitely was my time and the time. And I think all the way leading up to that, I was very passionate and fixated on this one problem and fixing this one problem. And then I feel that we got the business to a point where my position had, I'd hit my goal. Like I really feel like it was where, you know, I could take it and where I foresaw. If you told me 8 years prior, where would be an ultimate dream? I would have said right there and then. And that's where I got to when I decided to leave. And I think after that, the version of myself that has developed over the last sort of 2.5 years working with a lot of startups, you know, investing, being a shareholder in other startups as well, is just I have a huge passion for business. And when I think about that now, it's probably, you know, 50% of what drove me to the decision of leaving, because I was no longer passionate about that idea, but creating more of this, you know, in a repeat kind of effect. So there definitely was an evolution.
Yeah.
You kind of fulfilled your mission and then kind of moved on to the next stage, which is an important thing for an entrepreneur to actually know when you've hit your vision and your mission for that.
Yeah.
And actually like move on to the next thing that you want to build.
Definitely. And I think there's no shame in saying, you know, I've got it here, but I might not get it there. Mm. And I think especially in the tech world, it's hugely competitive. And when I look at some of the tech companies that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, I just am unsure, not because of self-doubt, but because I know where my sweet spot is as a founder, as a leader, where my skill set is, I don't think I'm that founder, you know? So yeah. I feel as though I left at a time where the next chapter just seemed not suitable for me.
Yeah.
So like a lot of people talk about when they, despite how successful they might be appearing to be when they go out on that journey of entrepreneurship, was there a moment where you felt a little overwhelmed or a little, I guess, obstructed by, okay, I'm leaving my job and I'm going out there in the world and it's all on me now. There's no security anymore. How was that transition for you?
I'm going to say young and naive is like magic, you know. never once during that period of time. Yeah. I had a few reality checks, you know. I remember so we went to Silicon Valley and we went to a conference called the Startup Grind, which is actually powered by Google. So it was a Google conference. And that's really, I think, where the magic happened. Both my co-founder and I speak of, you know, listening to all of these other entrepreneurs in this room that you probably wouldn't get in the same room these days, founder of Twitter, Lyft, Uber, ClassPass, like they were all in one room. And I think we felt a real common denominator between our mission and theirs. You know, we were like, our story sounds like that, you know? And that's where I guess we got the juice in the tank to come home and grow this business. The first week we came back and really started, you know, putting our head down, bum up, my salary was like, well, Mal transferred me my earnings for the weekend was $244. And I thought, oh, that's not going to get me too far, you know. Yeah. So I feel as though there was a few moments where it was like a little bit of a reality check. But me and fear are really something that have never really had much to do with each other.
Yeah.
So never any fear, but I think I started getting a little bit smarter and headstrong in my later years, and taking some of the risks that we took when we were in our early 20s became a little bit more challenging. You know, you sort of do things when you're a bit younger, you know, putting money back into tech or investing in this and that, and you don't quite know the return, but you have all that faith, you know, and because everything's a risk in business. Every investment is a risk, is no matter how good the ROI calculations look, sort of thing. But then when I got sort of in my later 20s, like the going over things and is this the right thing to do, but what if, and that thought process started to come into play a little bit more.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, for me, I remember when I first left my job at Telstra, I was like struggling to sleep because like, I guess it's different when you're potentially like, you know, with parents or you have that, that's somewhat of a security blanket, but man, it could be freaking scary. But seeing $250 hit your bank account,
that's a bit scary, isn't
that's
it?
That's pretty scary. Like it's like, oh my God. Like,
no, it doesn't go very far.
So you said that you're kind of the person that, I guess, welcomes fear or enjoys it. Like, how would you describe that?
Yeah, I think I have an appetite for risk is probably the best.
That's a nice way
The best way to put it. Even looking at, you know, I like to look at opportunity cost. You know, like, yeah, it may not work, but what's the opportunity cost of not giving it a crack? You know, what could happen if it does go right? That's sort of where my mind goes a little bit more, rather than shit, it's not going to work and all this could happen as a flow-on effect. It's like, well, what if it does go right, you know? And I think one of the biggest decisions that I had made in my career was to leave Equilution back in 2021, and that wasn't a decision that I made lightly. I took a couple of months annual leave before I made that decision. I actually took on my leave and I was just sort of sitting with it for a bit. I did a lot of online courses, read a lot of books, did a lot of exercise, and I think it was a soul-searching period when I look back now. And as much as it would have been very comfortable to stay, and I sort of look at that company now and I know exactly where I'd sit and exactly what I'd be doing, I took another chance, and it's just taken me on a completely different but great direction. And so that upside is probably what eliminates fear for me.
So when you say opportunity cost, like, do you have an example of maybe a moment in the beginning where like one little thing kind of pivoted your ability to have success somewhere?
Look, I can't really think of one particular thing that was sort of, you know, that was like sort of make or break. But I just remember at the time, you know, we developed a really strong competitor with a lot more bells and whistles to MyFitnessPal. And we were MyFitnessPal users, the calorie counting tool. And it doesn't do a hell of a lot other than count calories, you know, and we wanted to create a product that was an experience. We were particularly passionate about personalized meal plans and creating that balanced 80-20 approach, showing people how they can eat food they enjoy and still achieve their goals. And I think the MyFitnessPal being hugely successful, it got acquired by Under Armour at the time where we were building.
Oh, I didn't know that. Because I remember I used to use it at World Gym when I worked there.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the PTs were using it.
Yeah.
And my it was
PT
like...
PT trainers have always recommended it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was good. And
it's
it
good
was
for accountability and just even to like, you know, crack you into counting.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, but trail. Like you... I heard you talk about this with Matt Purcell and you were just basically saying like everyone kind of just has this mindset at the gym when they're a PT, where it's predominantly like, oh, we just have to eat broccoli and like a starch and, you know, just kind of eat that.
Eliminate.
Like, just like chicken, no sauce, no salt, nothing. Broccoli, maybe some carrots and a starch. And it's just like that. Every that kind of sucks because when I and again, I wasn't bodybuilding or anything like that, but I was just an avid gym goer. And everyone's like, oh, if you want to get cut and big, that's what you have to do.
You're like, is there a middle ground?
Yeah, like, is there any other option?
But there wasn't at that time. And that's a really good point because like the catalyst for a lot of our, you know, passion and drive came from the fact that just contextually, we didn't exist yet. We could see it in the market, you know. Mm. There was a need, but there wasn't something that slot in as nicely as what we created.
So you said you wanted to focus more on the experience and less on like just the counting calories.
The utility side of it. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely give more of an experience.
Yeah. And Emma and I, we recently worked with a company called My Drive Hero and we learned like how insanely difficult it is to build an app. Like just to get it to do one simple function, especially back in when was it? 2014?
Yeah.
So
2016 when we started building.
2016 when you started building the app. So when did you have the idea?
2014.
So 2014 was the idea and you were doing that as a service-based business.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So it was already validated essentially. Like we were making money off this concept, but just doing it all manually.
Yeah. So walk us through that. Like if I was a client, like what would I expect to experience?
So if you were a client in 2014, we would print you out a form and you would go and fill that form out and send it back to us via scanning and attach it to an email.
Scan.
Yeah.
Yep.
You would tell us your, you know, some data about your particular body in terms of age, height, weight, activity level, you know, training intensity, what your goal is, fat loss, muscle gain, weight management. And then you tell us a little bit about your food preferences. Now, if you said to us back in the day, you know, my favorite dinner of all time is spaghetti bolognese, we would put a plan together and meal five dinner, you'd see spaghetti bolognese. So that's how you know, sort of attentive it was to your food preferences. If, you know, a girl said my favorite chocolate is a Freddo frog, there would be a Freddo frog in meal six for dessert. So, so we were working off numbers and we had our own formula that calculated the intake requirements of the individual and then we'd use their food preferences to meet these requirements. So the app does that now, but on a automated basis.
So would you say like maybe the edge of that was or the effectiveness of that was, well, I can still eat what I want and still get the result I want. So then that's a hell of a lot more appealing than chicken, rice and broccoli.
There was a couple of key points of success in that company that I think are foundational in successful businesses these days. I think the first one is it's a really great product. And I think now more than ever in a really consumer driven world where we're presented with new ideas to buy something pretty much every 10 minutes, really. Like anytime you're spending on social media, someone's selling you something, you know? So now more than ever, having a quality product or service is so important. Back in the day, I think marketing could have, you know, fabricated the fact that you maybe weren't the best on the market, but you sold it the best. Mm. But I think in today's day and age, a quality product or service is really key. The second thing is like the result. So like it does need to work. So it needs to be like one, a good experience, and then two, needs to actually drive a result. People buy, you know, results. And the app did that. So, you know, whether you lost body fat or gained muscle or managed your weight, it was a science-based formula. So it worked and did what it said it did. And then the third thing is, you know, how does it make you feel? And we had a really sort of intimate and tight-knit community. And that's sort of something that, you know, I'm working with a lot of startups these days and, you know, a lot of the questions is when will this come or when will we see this and that? And I think the common denominator between lots of businesses with great communities is it does take time.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they were the three real great things that we did well.
So Emma and I were talking about this today where we're talking about like the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when I've heard people talk about app development or studying their own, even their service-based business, because it sounds like maybe the initial objective was service-based.
Very much, yeah.
And then you realize later on, oh, we got to turn this into an app,
yep,
an automated definitely process. So I'd like to dive into that. But Emma and I today were talking about this. Like, I guess a lot of people kind of skip the, like, what is the result or the impact we're going for here kind of question.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. A few questions that I always get my clients to answer when we first start working together. And I think what you've just mentioned is a lot in the last part. Who you are, what you do, who you do it for, and why. And I think the why factor is the really big one. And I know it sort of sounds cliche. I feel like a lot of people in marketing sort of, you know, what is your why? But like, seriously, what is your why? Like, and the outcome side of things, like, what are you trying to achieve with the customer? Do you want them to feel a certain way? Do you want them to see a certain result? Do you want them to do both? Because I think it has to form the basis of everything that you do.
It informs how you do everything as well, because if you know the why and what you're gunning towards, then you can carve the path to get there.
Yeah.
Without knowing that, people are a bit lost. You're kind of shooting in the wilderness and going, we can try this or this or this, and then you end up not seeing results and you get really discouraged.
100%. You know, something that I try and be in my advisory role is sort of a spokesperson for their customer. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, I'll have a business that will say to me, okay, we really want to run a campaign for December. And I'll say, okay, what are we focusing on? We want to drive more revenue. I was like, okay, so what's in it for them? You know, like why do they need to buy at this particular time? Like, what are we, you know,
aside from us making money,
like, what is the benefit if you know, we're bridging a gap between them pausing in November and continuing in February? Like, what's the benefit in them staying on for December, Jan, you know, that sort of thing. So I feel like I say to a lot of businesses that I work with, like, customer will always have the answer. Whether you're directly asking them or whether you're looking at their patterns as to why they came to you in the first place, they will always have the answer. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're listening, if you're actually listening, as opposed to kind of looking at what you want to project out and what you want to do as a business, if you take the time to pause and then listen to your customers.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's kind of always those two threads. It's like what we want, which is, you know, an important conversation to have in business. And then there's, well, what does the customer want?
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And that's really important also in the tech space when you are app developing, because you can have an idea of a product and features and all the bells and whistles that you want to include, but it's pretty irrelevant when you're dealing with a community of people on the other side. It's really up to what they want first. And even, you know, my co-founder and I still say to this day, you know, there were things that made the cut that we didn't necessarily think were going to make the cut, but they decided. So that's what happened. As long as you stay true to the vision, you know, you can, there's a few ways to kind of achieve it.
Yeah. And I heard of a story. I'm not sure how vetted out this is, but someone was explaining it to me that, like, when PayPal started and Elon Musk was like developing the system at PayPal and all the rest of it, one of the employees joked like, oh, it'd be kind of cool if I could email money. And then one of the programmers was like, yeah. And then spent like 2 or 3 days programming that. And that became the whole brand. Yeah. It was almost like everything else up until that point, the customer was like, okay, but like the fact that someone could email money was like, that's what the customer wanted. What were those moments where you started to transition from being service-based to going, okay, we need to go and build an automation process? Maybe before we get to that, like how did you even have the epiphany or the moment to go from, okay, we're a service-based business, let's automate this. This thing could be automated. That seems like quite a big shift in your business idea.
Yeah, that was actually, we started to get a lot busier, and we had already done the math that for every X clients we serviced, we had to bring on X new people. So we did know that there was a ceiling already, but it was actually one Saturday and my business partner and I, we lost our lives pretty early on. Like it was sort of 7 days a week for a lot of years. And she rang me one Saturday and I think she'd had enough of doing meal plans. Like you kind of get jack of it after the 10th, you know.
It can only be fun for so long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she was like, wouldn't it be so cool if there was just an app that spat this out? And we were just like, well, that's the goalpost. Yeah. So that's sort of how it started. And I think it was just always going to be a natural progression. I look now in the industry and, you know, every man and their dog have sort of done it. But I think, it was always sort of a natural progression.
Yeah. So when that happened, so a lot of people have these ideas. What was the next step from like, yeah, that's a cool idea too. Okay, where do we start? Like, how do you even start fleshing that
out? Well, then we learned how expensive it was. And that was a bit scary.
Yeah.
It's sort of like 21, 22, and then sort of looking at like a $250,000 bill, and we're like still living at home and all the rest. But we looked to get educated first, and we heard that Silicon Valley was the tech hub of the world. So we trotted off there.
Hang on. So like you just up and left.
Literally, yeah.
Did you have...
I broke up with my boyfriend and she had broken up with hers and we just...
ran out of here.
Yeah, we went. Yeah, we went to America.
Yeah, so you guys were like all out.
We had saved quite a bit of money. Yeah. I think that's when we made like a joint account. We'd saved quite a bit of money and...
You guys were like in on this.
We were in, yeah, we were all in. We'd saved a bit of money and then we just thought this will last us like quite a while.
Yeah.
And then we probably went a bit too hard too soon in the in the bougie lifestyle over in LA.
Yeah.
But yeah, we moved over there and we got a rental for... it was actually on La Cienega Boulevard in LA. It's actually a real cool time when I think back on it now. I could not... You know, you get a little bit older. You can't do these things like you used to. Not that, you know, time has done its dash on me or anything like that. But, like, my family is so close and I've got, you know, I'm engaged now. And it's like how, you know, you don't have that same freedom.
Level of commitment, yeah.
Yeah.
So if anyone's listening, break up with your partner and move to LA.
Do it and piss off.
Don't do that. Okay, so you broke up with your boyfriend.
Yeah.
You moved to LA. You got an apartment together. You shared an account.
Mm.
Okay, and then what? Like, how did you go from that?
Well, we kind of fucked around for a little bit and decided that we...
21.
Yeah, and decided that we hadn't really achieved much in our grand stint over there. And to be honest with you, I think we told a lot of people. Like, I remember seeing a Facebook status that I made only like not that long ago.
Like a reminder. It's like a reminder. Remember you said this?
It was like 2014. It was like me, my best friend and our big dream. Like we had pitched to the people that we were going over there to achieve something. And then I think
everyone would have been like, why are you going?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then I think we thought three things. We were either going to learn how to build an app, we were going to find a CTO, or we're going to get an investor. Right. So we thought one of three things. None of those things happened. so when we went over and found the startup grind, it was basically just because we needed to do something.
And that's like an event where you can go
that was an event.
Meet people.
Yeah. At that event, we got approached by... we had like a... there was sort of like a networking sort of break.
Right.
Mm. We got approached by this like group of guys. Admittedly, we were few females in the whole crowd of hundreds of people.
So it's a tech event.
Yeah, it's a tech event. And they're probably...
it's more
like,
Mountain Dew than it is Starbucks.
Yeah, right? What are these girls...
naturally magnetic.
What are these girls doing? Yeah. So we were like, oh, you know, we've got like an app idea and everything. And we told them about our business. We told them how much revenue we'd made. And I think the first year we were six figures, I'm fairly sure. It was like, it was a hit from the get-go. Mm-hmm. We told them how much money we had made and that we hadn't really done anything with it, like marketing-wise or anything like that. We're just here to try and, you know, create a scalable version of it. And they offered us money for 20% or something like that. And that's when we had a bit of an aha moment. Like, oh my gosh, we are onto something. And we had a few of those validating moments throughout the experience.
So they offered you, by the sounds of it, quite a good sum of money.
No, terrible, for 20%. Oh. And we were just like, keep your money. But
I read it the other way. So you were kind of like, we don't need you.
We don't need them, but like we were like, we needed that for ourselves because you need a few moments along the way to tell you that you're on the right path.
So that was one of the big aha moments.
That was a moment, yep. And then another one was a lot of the stories that came out of the startup grind, you know, a lot of the big, big apps started in accelerator programs over in the States. Mm-hmm. So we came back to Australia and we enrolled in a startup program an accelerator program for startups at Sydney University. It was called Incubate. And we basically rocked up there with our business and our idea and said, like, we want to build an app. They directed us onto some uni kids that were, like, in our class, really bright app developers. And this is at the time where, like, kids were building gaming apps and then selling them for, you know, $200,000 to some big guy in an office. Like, it was a pretty cool, innovating time. And so we met these uni kids. We paid them $10,000. They built us an app. It completely failed. And we had, like, no contract, nothing. Mm. And then through the program, we found another mentor who had built and developed overseas in San Fran and then had, like, a third party that managed a Manila agency.
Yeah.
Mm.
So we did that and that was $280,000. That was almost immediately after and that failed as well.
Oof,
so
damn.
When we found our third developer, we had built a business that could support the tech investment, which was a really great thing. I think that was a good thing that we did in parallel, was even though we're trying to build an app, and I think that's a good thing about partnership.
Yeah.
Because I was focused on sales and marketing. So I was putting the message out there and getting sales and acquiring new business for our existing business. And then my co-founder was really focused on developing the app, which also was a big thing that led to my phasing out of the company too, because I semi got made redundant. You know, so there was a big part of what I did from day dot that made it so hugely successful that wasn't as needed anymore. So
once you automated and brought that app in. Interesting that counterbalance of being essential in the process of building the app, but then also being made redundant once it was in play.
Yeah.
Like, automating is amazing, but then how are you going to transition and what are you going to do when you do introduce it?
And I think the business was asking of me a leadership position where I would sort of like rule the roost and, you know, get the best out of people and put people in the right places to achieve results. But I had more in me. I'm like, that's just not going to cut it for me, you know. So that would have been the natural progression for me. And that's essentially what happened to both of us. But I was just so – I remember so many hours just sitting in my office just being like, I think there's more. I think there's more. And obviously you guys would know, you know, when you're in marketing and, you know, you're writing and you're expressing and you're trying to sell something, if you're not passionate or even slightly, you know, I was pretty done with talking about calories by the end after 8 years. I was pretty
– like, I've conquered this
thing. I was pretty over it. So, yeah, but look, that's how – it really came to fruition. It was like a couple of failed attempts at building the app, and then we found our developer through a referral. And he's my business partner to date. So his name's Ken. He's from a company called Devica. They're down in Wollongong, and he had a shot and he did it. So yeah, that was really good.
So what are some red flags that people, if they are considering developing their own tech and building an app, what are some red flags that now you'd look back and go, you know what, that I should have paid attention to?
I spoke at a Business News Australia event, and there was a fab company there, and they do drones and imagery, and it, you know, they've got a lot of government initiatives that help with, you know, pollution and things like that through the satellite imagery that they can detect. And he was a non-technical founder, and he had a technical co-founder, and he was from India originally. So their whole team was in India, and he was just like, you know, if I can tell anyone anything, build in India, like explore it as an option. There's some massive talent over there, and, you know, it's a lot cheaper. And I automatically thought, like, we were two non-technical co-founders. Right. So that technical counterpart, if there's not, you know, really great communication, if you're not in the same time zone, if they're not talking our language, we're not going to understand, you know? And I think that was an issue that we experienced.
Yeah. Did you struggle to ask questions as well? Like, did you feel that being non-technical, if you didn't maybe 100% know what was going on, did you tend to trust them rather than maybe have the confidence at that age to question and pull things apart?
I feel like we always had a really stern vision, and that never really changed, which is a great thing, because you don't really need to make too many tricky decisions along the way if you're really sure about what you're creating. And I think that might be 50% of people who go to create apps and tech products. The issue is that they're not 100% just yet on what they're creating.
Oh, right.
Just gotta
so they're like, they're in the neighborhood, but they haven't picked a block of land yet.
And exactly. Yeah. And because we were running this business manually, we're like, it just needs to do this, but in this version.
Right.
You know?
So very clear.
Very clear. And this is what we do from the back end. This is what they need to experience from the front end.
And we've always found that, like, even as a brand agency, like, if we have a client and they're ambiguous on their brief, it's really hard to, like, pull a project together.
They'll always be the first to complain as well, right? Yeah. When you don't hit the nail on the head. It's like, you were not even clear.
Yeah, because they don't know what they want, so they don't know when you've hit it.
Yeah.
You're sitting there going, but it's the brief you described, but they're fluctuating on what they actually want and what the goal is.
Yeah. Definitely. So, so I think we definitely had the ability to ask the questions and felt comfortable to do so. But I think where the disconnect happened between why it maybe failed, aside from skill, because that's a big thing, you know, anyone can say they can build. Yeah, exactly. It's a big thing. What we liked about Ken was he had the runs on the board. So he had built products before we saw them, and we heard from people who owned them and whatever, and it was all great things. But one thing he did differently, which is how I encourage my clients now who are wanting to, you know, build a tech product or something like that is he took things incrementally rather than built the end product straight away. So,
right.
Yeah. So yeah,
he built the ingredients and then put the whole dish together later.
Exactly. So for example, our payment gateway was all manual and we were using a number of different things off the shelf, but we had a specific subscription service. And so he built, created that first and a new website and a way of onboarding first. And then he created the back end and then the team started using that. And then, you know, we got test users on. It was just very incremental rather than, hey guys, we've got a new app. Join now. Yeah. Link in bio. Like it was.
And you're testing it as you go. It was knowing staged. It's working, moving the team onto it. And so,
And I've got a similar client who he's working with at the moment, who is a service-based business. And I can see that we're doing sort of the same thing where she's going to be using the product internally first to make the speed of what they do a lot faster and reduce human error and all the rest. And then once they're happy with how they use the system, they're going to make the system available to people in the market. So I think, that strategy is something that has stuck with me.
Yeah. Are there any other red flags, any other things that you would, I guess, deter people from when they're trying to develop an app?
I think price, like definitely get a bunch of quotes. I think that can vary hugely from, you know, even something that's low priced is a problem. You know, why? You know, if you've got two quotes that are at $400,000 to build an app, but then you've got one at $120,000, what are they doing? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so I think querying price is really good. I think also ownership is where some people get a bit stuck to, you know, like who owns the rights to this product. I think you have to always make sure that it comes back to the business. And also I think confidence too, because Ken was very confident that he could deliver, but he was never like, you know, 100% and promised us the world. He was very realistic, you know, he was very realistic about time and budget and things like that. And I think anyone who sells you the dream will do all this. We'll do it in 4 months and you are going to go to market and we'll have no bugs, no issues. I think that's a red flag.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There's always going to be things going wrong.
100%.
Every project.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why breaking down in increments is a smart maneuver.
Yeah, definitely. And,
you know, we do the same thing with branding. We don't just go, okay, we've done the workshop. Here's your brand. Like we tried that in the first year. Awful result.
Well, don't you find that sometimes it's just overwhelming and people just like don't know. So when do I post this and when and what do I say? And
exactly.
You know. Yeah.
It's almost like too much too quickly and overwhelms the customer. So like what we learned, and I learned this very early on, you know, thank God for my mentors, and they were like, oh, you have to facilitate the client through a journey. Mm-hmm. They can't just go start to finish. And I think a lot of clients have this mindset of like, I pay you, take me to the finish line. But it's like, well, actually the best, I guess, relationships, especially with tech, developing an app, building a brand, building a website, whatever you're doing creatively, it should be an incremental process where you participate incrementally throughout the process.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
toward the finish line together as a team.
It's also like anything you haven't tackled before, you don't realize the complexity and the extent of it until you dive in and then you go, oh, there's a lot to this that I didn't realize. And so that's where being handheld through those stages is so helpful.
Yeah. You just got to make sure you don't get client fatigue. You know, when you're in like your 12th week, I'm like, I'm ready for a break now.
I don't want to date this person anymore. Okay. So you talked about like it got to a certain point in your business where you started to feel like you became like redundant in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess as a business owner, that can be an awkward position to be in, because you're like, okay, I got this team, I've got these overheads, things are going great. Like, why do I feel this way? Like, What was the metamorphosis out of that? And do you feel like rather than molding yourself to a new role, you felt more comfortable pivoting into something else?
Yeah, 100%. I think I started really learning about business, I think, at that point. And it's funny because I'd had a business and a lot of people would have said I'd had a business that was further along than most other business people. But I felt like I still had a lot to learn. And I think that curiosity is a really good sign that, you know, you're not complacent. But if you ignore this, you may get complacent. So I started becoming quite educated on, you know, I looked at other – I even made more friends that were in business naturally, you know, like some of my friendships started to form because like they had a business, like one of my best mates, Ice, who we podcast together, and he's got that YKTR, the clothing label.
Yeah.
Him and I became really good mates, and then, you know, I met other people in business and they all had really great businesses, and I just felt the energy and like my mind just started like opening up. It was like I'd lived in this little Equilution bubble for a period of time. And
that's a thing though, right?
It's a full thing.
Because the biggest shake up for me was like, you know, if I rewind 4 years ago, I was working at Telstra.
Yep.
Right. And all my friends were like, you know, people that I grew up with or like I used to game with or whatever. And it's like now, you know, I'm hanging out with people that run big enterprises, billion-dollar companies in real estate and in different industries, and it's such a weird thing. It's
natural as well, like the way that it comes your way when you're putting that energy out too.
And you start to have different conversations, you start to hang out in different places. Like how much would you say that shift in like your network around you started to impact your mindset and your behavior?
A lot. I also think that just, you know, being a 25-year-old, 26-year-old female is hard anyway, you know, especially when, you know, you add a business, the complexity of having a business and a lot of people dependent on you on top of that. And then also it was really when I started to feel incredibly lonely in my life. I think I'd spent a lot of years head down, bum up on this, focus on this goal, and then I'd completed the goal. And then I really got to sit back and think to myself, you've been a pretty shit daughter, you've been a pretty shit sister, you've been a pretty shit you know, friend, like
the sacrifices.
You've sat out on a lot. I think you got to come back to you. And wow. I think that came at that period of time as well.
When
so
you were 26?
Yeah.
So do you feel like maybe you lost a part of yourself up until that point?
I lost every part of myself. Wow. Every part of myself when I was building that business. It gave me a lot of joy, but given the life that I have now and how fulfilled I am, it gave me a fraction of what life had to offer me outside of that business. And it's still like, even, you know, this podcast, right? It's so much of me. It is everything that I've become. That business has got me to this point, but it also costs a lot in those really special years. So my biggest priority now is getting that back. Not even just time with others, but learning. I stopped learning because I thought this business had all the answers, you know?
Right.
You were laser focused in on it.
Laser.
How do people avoid then becoming so laser focused in on that thing that they do lose other parts or areas of their life? Like what tips would you have for them to avoid kind of those circumstances or repeating that?
I think checking yourself is pretty important. Just like, you know, a bit of reflection. In the last year before I left, it was the first time I got a therapist, and I've got my beautiful EA at the time, who I'm still really, really close with. She said to me, I think you should go and talk to someone. And because I was just feeling so sad, like I was feeling really, really empty and had everything. Like I was I was 26 and I had it all, but I didn't at the same time. I had nothing compared to what I had now.
You had this external success, but on the inside you didn't feel right.
The definition of everything is,
definitely. Yeah. So it was the first time I went and saw someone and sat down at a psychologist and just went, and I think I was ready to do the work on myself. Yeah. But I think if you're not ready, you know, you're probably not going to come out of it. So that checking yourself part, you might be something you're ready to do or not, but I think that is the first step to turning a corner.
And you have this quote where it's like every part of your journey contributes to where you end up, right? Mm. So like even though you were head down, bum up for all that period of time, like what would you say contributed to maybe having blindness to what you should be prioritizing, and then how did that help you afterward?
Really, I was just really determined, and obviously, you know, understood through the sheer determination to achieve that goal that I had a uniqueness as well. And I think those things didn't die. They just needed a new environment. And I think that was part of the confidence that came after, and to do it again and rinse and repeat, because the things that made that business successful haven't gone anywhere. You know, they still are in me. I just needed a hot minute. I just needed a hot
minute. We all go through that as well. Like even myself, like, you know, I was talking to Vin Yang about this, and he's got this beautiful program he's releasing called Recalibrate, and I was able to be like a guinea pig or a beta tester's program. And when we sat down, he had this page full of values, and he was just like, highlight the ones that are magnetic toward you. And I was like, man, relentless, pursuit, like tenacity. I was highlighting all these words. I'm like,
I'm fierce.
I'm a go-getter. I'm relentless. I'm disciplined and masculine. And then afterward, he goes, okay, now like go back and reflect on what do you need more of?
Mm.
And I was like, oh, shit.
So true.
Yeah. And then I went back and I was like, family.
Yeah.
Presence. Calm. I was like, this is like a polarity.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can get into that mode.
You can.
And it's hard to get out of it. And especially when you're in like survival mode.
Yeah.
So for me, the first 3 years of this business, I was like, you know, making a lot of money, but then putting all of it back in it and hiring the team and expanding it. And it was just like almost like this do or die mentality, which you do require discipline, tenacity, all the rest of it, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't make you happy.
Definitely. You know, though, similarly to we sort of do similar roles now, but something that I find different about, you know, what we do today to what I did at Equilution is Equilution had the ability to be its own bubble and world and just focusing on that one thing. But I feel like we, because we interact and deal with so many other brands and visions and life forms, I think that it gives you, you know, I could just hammer it in, you know, I've got a ventures and advisory firm now. I could just hammer it in that, but I don't think I would go as stale as what I did just in that same one zone. I feel like I just got a bit adaptive to just what was around me, and what was around me was changing, but it was still the Equilution world. Like there wasn't.
Right. So you were kind of in a bubble.
I was in a bubble.
Being reactive to your circumstances.
Yeah. Niched all the way down. And it was like that one little world.
The day started looking similar.
The same, you know? Yeah.
Groundhog day, same routine.
Similar clients.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas I think now, working with different businesses in startup phase, it's like, it's very exciting.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's why I love branding, because it's like, you know, 1 minute we're working on a law firm.
On this, and then the next.
Then it's like sex toys, and then it's like, okay, now we're doing fashion. It's like, woohoo, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
variety is so underrated. It's so exciting because it helps you keep that rhythm and you're learning and growing constantly, but it's always different.
Yeah.
Every client is always different.
And you know, at the time, I probably would have thought that my role was diverse and the business was always changing and you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like, it was the comfortable,
The comf, yeah.
Yeah, the comf.
The comf. Okay, so did you have a point where you're like, okay, I'm redundant now. I'm going to put people in this position and kind of like let this kind of take its own legs, or are you still very involved?
No, I think I felt the redundancy thing more after, like on reflection, like this year, for example. I was like, that's why it didn't feel...
So you didn't really notice it at the moment. No, until like
not at all.
You're like, oh, okay.
Not at all. Yeah. I joked about it. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it's just replaced me, you know, but I didn't give two hoots. Yeah. Like I was still very busy. So,
that's a good point, right? Cause when you get so busy, you can kind of block out the need to reflect.
Yeah. And I think there's some people that think really in depth about a lot of things. And I am that person, you know, I am a thinker and I'm a feeler all at the same time, which can be quite a heavy load to deal with sometimes. And where, you know, my team or my co-founder or whatever might have just been thinking about the next quarter or the next year, I was thinking about my life. And I think it was the age and time that I was supposed to. And I think that's really what drove the decision to move on, because I just thought I can stay and I'll stay, or I can go and I don't know, but I know, you know, like that was that confidence that because as we've said, you know, like those founding qualities, they don't go anywhere.
And you need to have those moments too, where you have those moments of like, I could probably shift gears now.
Yeah.
Like it's like, not like the roles played itself out, but we got to know those moments where it's like, okay, I've conquered this. Now it's time to kind of let go a little bit. You know, I don't know where I heard this, but it's kind of like, you know, in order to grab the next vine, you know, Tarzan analogy.
Yeah, you got to let go. It's true. It's so true. And, you know, sometimes you don't always know the answers and what's going to be on the other side.
Is that risk feeling?
Yeah, it is. But I think just plan the next step. And that's really like, you know, May 2021 when I stepped out, that was my focus. It was just like, okay, you're out. Just replace your salary, you know, like you just replace your salary. That's the first step. And then it was like, can you create a business out of this? And then that's when I started the agency. And then, you know, like it just naturally, if you take it one step at a time, it's not so scary. It's just about those smaller goals.
That's a really good point. Yeah. And I heard someone describe it as like, as an entrepreneur, it's like you're in the seat of a car and you're driving down a windy road, like a dirt road in the dark.
Yeah.
And you've got one headlight on and it's like flickering. And you're going 100 miles an hour and it's kind of like you're dodging trees and all that kind of... That's what entrepreneurship feels like for me sometimes.
So true. Do you know...
That's what it feels like being in the rival but you can vehicle
make, you can
times.
Make the whole journey that way. Yeah. That's the point.
My mate Ice posted a funny quote yesterday. It was like a meme and it was like, when people ask me what it's like being an entrepreneur, I say... Have you ever drank a Red Bull to calm down?
Mm-hmm. That's such a good quote.
It's so good, eh?
Yeah.
That's so true.
It feels like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so now it sounds like you've got the agency.
Had.
Okay.
Yeah, I went. So basically.
You need to update your LinkedIn then.
Yeah, I do. I do. This is so fresh. This is really fresh. So this has happened in the last sort of 2 months.
Right.
So what I took from the agency was I built a clientele. I have had the same clients since I started working at the agency and have just added more along the way sort of thing. So clients stay with me for years, like is something that I've learned, which is a really great thing. But I couldn't see myself like breaking up with them, and some of them were doing great things that I wanted to put a little bit of cash in and, you know, have a bit of skin in the game. And funny enough, back in 2019, I'd actually posted a story on my Instagram, and Instagram reminded me like a year ago or something. And it was something that I said, people were like, what's your goals for the future? And one of them was have two apps, because at the time I had Equilution and I had an idea to do another one, which is still not off the table. But I had two apps and to have a VC firm that invests in small startups and growth companies.
What year was that?
And that was 2019. So I was still at Equilution.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the investment space has been really interesting, but it wasn't in alignment with the agency model and, you know, project management and things like that. I'm like, it kind of maybe got me here, but there's another sort of chapter. So I did that for just on 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. From the day I left, basically.
What did you take away from running an agency? Because it's obviously I'm in an agency, but like what was your...
My hat goes straight off.
Hey, thank you so much. What did you enjoy and what were you like, I could do without that?
What I loved was the building process, and it really helped me heal from the Equilution journey too, because I kind of understood that I am a startup girl. Like she loves a startup, you know? So I think that was something that I was like, oh, no wonder you in year eight were like, you know, a bit restless because startup world is so different. You know, you're bringing something to life and, you know, you're feeding it to the people and seeing if they like the taste, like basically. So I feel as though I was really enjoying that journey and being part of the business as an advisor, but not really just a check-in once a week. Like I'm almost like a worker in their business. You know what I mean? So having like a seat at the table was something that I really enjoyed because I was part of the team. Like they feel like my team. And that's really cool. Working with amazing founders, it's really nice to be surrounded by that energy. You know, they probably think I inspire them. They inspire me.
Wow.
So I think that's been a really great part of what I've learned. But the things that I didn't enjoy and I didn't even like delegating them is just like project management, you know.
Right.
Like it was just like we built websites and, you know, logo, brand design and graphics and things like that. And that was sort of the mundane side of things for me, but it's actually the most in demand when you're dealing with an agency usually.
Yeah, I think a lot of like clients think, oh yeah, these guys are just designing a logo, but it's like there's this whole orchestra and symphony and there's a conductor and there's different instruments and there's so much that goes into project management.
Definitely. Like, and I could
that's
have
where
seen...
my hat goes off to Emma because Emma's really the master of
that's
that.
That's the
domain.
World I'm in currently.
it's a tricky one. And I could have seen how that could have developed. Like I was probably doing a lot at the start because it was a startup, you know? So
we you didn't wear have a few hats always.
Yeah. So we didn't have like all the resources that, you know, you guys even have like this is a full house. Like, you know what I mean? So I could see how that could have progressed, but I just had a pull towards like the investment, you know, shareholder, board member, strategic advisor. I just felt a pull there.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
And would you say, like, from your experience, you've seen a lot of different types of entrepreneurs?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're working with a lot of founders,
yeah,
how do you kind of categorize the different types of founders in a startup?
I think that there are some founders that are naturally inherently gifted when it comes to people. They understand people, they can communicate with people, and they're a people's person, like people like them.
Yeah.
I've got this one client who's just a dream to work with. Like, she's fabulous and she's got a fantastic seven-figure business, but she's just a likable woman, you know. Mm. And she at times has said, oh, you know, I know, you know, we could probably make some money from it, but I'd rather just give it to the clients. Like, they've been fab. You know, she's that type of woman.
Yeah.
And just a likable individual. And I think they're destined to succeed because
you can give her a plug if you want.
Ash Lane from Train with Ash. She's
Train with Ash.
Train with Ash. She's just fab. She's absolutely fabulous woman. Mm. And then, you know, I think there's other founders that they might have a vision, but they just want other people to do it.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that's why, that's where I'm usually a point of contact, because it's like, I want to do this, but I just don't know how. And then you believe from my end that you're going to start working together, but they sort of just tap out and they're like, Jade, it's up to you. Like, you drive.
Okay. And so you've got like the backseat entrepreneur.
Yeah. The backseat.
Then you got the driver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Backseat entrepreneur usually has a bit of cash too. And they just like, they just want to throw
put
it at
the cash on the table. You
just like put the right people in the right places to drive something. But, and that can work. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's more just like, it's not as emotion filled and passionate.
A bit more hands off. And maybe is that a little bit more of a cash flow thing for them, or setting themselves up for something rather than more of a passion project?
I think so. I think like maybe commercial, but I also think a little bit of just like not capable of doing it, and they probably know.
So it sometimes could be a capability thing.
Yeah,
sometimes
definitely.
Maybe a I don't know thing.
And sometimes I don't care thing as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so, okay. That's so play really with me here.
I think that's really common. The I don't cares.
Yeah.
The people love them. Yeah. You know, the people's person, people's choice, and naturally really gifted. And I think there's some people that have been put on this earth to do a thing. Mm. Like, you know, they really believe.
You meet them and you're like, you should be doing it.
Yeah. And they know that too. You know, I think that's a bit the evolution journey. Like, we started a nutrition company and we were not nutritionists. So we just felt we needed to do this job, you know, and I think that's a thing too. And you can have a mix of, you know, qualities and stuff, but that's usually categorically like how I find founders to be. But the saddest ones are the ones that have got so much potential, you know. I think part of my job is getting that out. Like, I've had conversations with clients before where they've doubted themselves, and I have said, you know, I would not be here and back you with, you know, my time and energy if I didn't believe in you. And I think that's part of, you know, being a mentor as well, is just every now and again, I try and not do the woo-woo stuff as much as the strategic stuff, but every now and again, you just need to pull someone in line.
Need a little bit of coaching.
Yeah.
Would you say that there's some characteristics that you see are common or consistent in very successful entrepreneurs?
Mm-hmm. Main one, they are willing to do anything, anything, work the hardest in the room. And, you know, I know in today's day and age, a lot of people speak about, you know, do you think you can have work-life balance, or how do you have work-life balance? And obviously it's a really big priority, especially, you know, when you consider the downside of not having it being impact on your mental health. But I also think in any successful person, you'll speak to them and there'll be a chapter that's almost like a blur, you know? And I think people that are willing to do that at any stage of their life, they've got what it takes. Even, but that's not just having like a, you know, you don't need to have heaps of money or like a hugely successful business to have that. Some people just have that that quality. You know, my partner, he owns a signage company. So he does all like, you know, Tui's New and Red Rooster and Porto's and stuff like that. And he works like a dog. Like, he'll leave the house at 3:30 and he'll come home at 7:30, and then he'll jump on his computer and do invoicing and all the rest. And he's done that since the day I've known him, you know? And I think that work ethic goes such a long way. Like, when I look at the growth of his business, it's like year on year type thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, some people just are willing to do what it takes, you know? They get their scale and they get the parameters that they're working in, and, you know, Matt will never, my partner will never say, you know, I'm going to go sell my company for $50 million or something like that. Like, he knows like his league that he's playing in, but he's hitting goals in that league because he's just willing to work so hard.
Do you find that people like that are constantly taking stock of themselves and knowing when their threshold is, and how do they find that?
Yeah, I think even like challenging that too, like when things, it's like that self-check thing that I was saying before, when things get a bit too comfy, I think the people that are willing to do something about it, you know, get somewhere, I think.
Yeah. You've got that grit.
Got the grit, yeah, definitely.
And by the way, congratulations, you guys just got engaged.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much. Hey. Do you know, when we got engaged, this is like a big end part to the whole Equilution story. Obviously, when I was reassessing my whole life and realizing that I was like really lonely and whatnot at like 26, 27, when I left the business in May of 2021, I actually met Matt in the November of 2021. So it was a really short after, and I hadn't had a serious relationship for 7 years. So it goes to show, when you're happy, you know, things come your way. But when he proposed, I was bawling my eyes out for a good couple of minutes, and I just dropped to the floor. I was like, I never thought this would happen for me.
That's beautiful.
Because I really got to a point where I just thought,
not in my horizon.
Yeah, is it just not in this lifetime, maybe?
Yeah, and I feel like it takes, like, on a personal level here, it takes like a confident guy to be capable of like proposing and being comfortable with a woman who's an entrepreneur.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's a different dynamic maybe than the other way around, right?
Totally. Yeah. And even yesterday when Ice and I did a potty, he was like, sort of, you know, now that you're engaged, like, what does wife life look like for you? You know, okay. Like, how is it, how's the dynamic going to be? And I think I've obviously met my match and my person, because we're certainly not going to be conventional, but it's just going to work for us, you know? Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he's like the primary caregiver and I go back to work and all that kind of stuff when we have kids. And even in terms of, you know, work and stuff, it's like, it just feels like a team effort. Yeah. He emotionally, like, even right now I'm going through a heck of a lot to exit the company right now at Equilution. And, you know, I was like sort of having my daily updates with him on the phone, telling him, you know, spoke to my lawyer, this and that. And it's very taxing. And just the support that I get on the other side, it's like, fuck, you add so much to my life that I didn't have before. And it just, it really does feel like a team. Wow. So, yeah.
And on that, like, I think it's really important to have a really strong network of people around you. So how do some people who maybe are struggling with that, how do they identify that? How do they find those people maybe?
Yeah.
Well,
good question, dude.
Yeah, good question. It's kind of like, I posted our engagement, our proposal on my TikTok, and I did the caption, point of view, you meet your person at 30 and it was worth the wait. And someone commented and said, like, you know, I feel like I'm never going to meet him, and any advice or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not down to give relationship advice, but like, I don't want to,
like, that's not my forte.
Like, I don't want to be that girl. But one thing I thought of when I saw that question was like, I remember my mum always used to say, you're not going to meet your husband on the lounge, because
because my best friend, like, all the time, you know, get out of the house.
No, seriously. And the night that I met Matt, it was like a YOLO. My girlfriend said, on a Wednesday night, Tim Zhu was fighting, and it was like one of those UFC fight nights. She said, why don't we just go down to the pub and have a drink? And I was like, YOLO, let's go. Like, I was on leave at the time from Equilution, and this was my soul search period. I'm like, that's what this time is for, you know? So we trotted down to the pub, and that's where I met him. But yeah, look, going back, I think, like, when I was unhappy, I felt like I started to create this world where just I was in it, and no, you know, that I wasn't doing a lot of, like, and some things are uncomfortable. Like, networking is uncomfortable. If you've been, you know, a head down, bum up entrepreneur, and you've fallen off the face of the earth with your friendship group, going back to that first gig and being like, sorry, I've just been really busy.
Guys.
Yeah. I'm back.
Yeah.
Everything is going to feel a little bit uncomfortable, but I think human connection is where a lot of, like, the great things start, because you attract, it's an energy thing. I really, really believe that, as woo-woo it sounds.
I'm with you there.
I'm like your woo-woo guest.
No, you should hear the conversations we have. Like, even, you know, Cam and I, when we were traveling recently, like, we were just talking about, like, the whole energy thing is a real thing.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. 'Cause, like, you, like if you're down and out and you're having a bad time and you're feeling a bit depressed and all the rest of it, you start to like attract those people.
100%. You sense
it, your body language and like the signals that you're giving off. People kind of read that and go, nah, too much effort. I'm just going to get dragged into a bit of a black hole. Avoid it. Yeah.
One of my favorite entrepreneurs is Erin Deering from Triangle.
Oh, love them.
Yeah, she's epic. Anyway, I listen to a lot of her podcasts and just pretty much any time she speaks, I'm listening. And one thing that she has sort of spoken about after her Triangle exit was doing the work. So she sort of acknowledged that she came out of that business, you know, absolutely broken and just energetically and emotionally drained and needed to just press a reset button in her life and just dedicated some time to really finding herself and loving herself. She talks about it very openly, like an array of things from like eating disorders to, you know, just not feeling good in her own skin. And it really, like, your self-worth and, you know, reflection comes a lot from your self-confidence. And I think the key sometimes to changing the trajectory of your life is really taking a look in the mirror and being able to say, like, I dig you, rather than like, I'm so off you.
Being your own number one fan.
Yeah, 100%. Because I can tell you now with full confidence that I didn't like the person that I was when I was at the peak of my evolution journey.
That's heavy.
You know, and I even look at, like, for example, in my agency, one of our girls left after like a year and a half, and she was moving on to, you know, bigger and better things. And I remember in that time, like, I cried when, you know, we said our goodbyes, and I just said, like, you like have such a gift and I can't wait to see what you do with it and all that kind of stuff. And I remember reflecting afterwards and thinking, like, how many times I was like not in the right headspace to give those words of wisdom, or was pissed off, or was just like, well, fuck you. And, you know, my ego was taking over when I was in Equilution. And I saw, like, so many girls may have not seen that version of me, you know, but I had that ability as a leader to really like leave an imprint. And I wasn't horrible by any means. I'm probably not painting myself in the best light, but I wasn't the best version of myself. And that's what leaving the company and dedicating to this new chapter was about. It was like, just make yourself proud, sort of thing.
You have to be really comfortable and invest a significant amount of time in yourself to be a good leader, I find, because the minute I'm a little bit stressed or a little bit tired or a little bit cranky, the first thing that goes is my patience and like being able to translate that through to team. And so I have to invest in myself in the morning to be able to have the energy to then share that and be there for them.
Yeah.
Through the day.
And so true.
It's tough.
Ice was literally saying that yesterday. He said that he's been, you know, in the pressure cooker a little bit lately. And he's like, I'm just seeing it in how I engage. I don't like it. I need
patience
a break.
Gets a bit raggedy. And like you get a little bit haphazard with comments or a little bit short. And it just it eats away at the team environment.
And self-awareness is a massive piece in that too. Like, I guarantee, you know, a person that met me yesterday wouldn't have said the same things about me as someone that met me five years ago, sort of thing. And, and that's fine.
You know? Do you think someone would have said about you 5 years ago versus last week?
Let me tell you what my boyfriends might have said, like people that I was dating, because I think that's a really good level to go to. I think if I dated someone previous to Matt, I think they would have said, I'm tough, you know, really focused, probably a bit emotionless at times, even though I was such an emotional person, but it was a facade. And probably needs to relax a little bit, you know, a bit uptight. And then Matt would say, you know, she'll give you the shirt off her back. She's kind, she's soft, like, just different, you know, just really, really different.
Was there something that like humbled you or gave you that reality check? Or do you think it was as simple as not digging yourself?
I think it was being a beginner again, because when I left the company, I didn't get no gold, silver platter handed to me. Like, it was like,
it's like, here's an award.
And you know, that was a complex that I carried for, you know, a hot minute of like, was I one hit wonder? And that was sort of something.
Oh, so you were like actually fearful, like that would be my best.
It went through my mind.
Okay.
But I've done greater things since I've left. Like, that business as a story is immaculate. Like, it, you know, you couldn't write it better. It was a really great story, you know, with two energetic, young, you know, unique main characters. So I think that story in itself, I'm not out here to try and replicate it.
Yeah. And you're only 31.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, maybe. So maybe there's another story. Yeah, there's
a lot of stories. Okay, yeah. So what are you obsessed with now going forward? Like, what's something you're crazy about?
I'm still really obsessed with technology. Okay. And I think we're only just seeing the start of really where it's going to go. Yeah. So obviously I'm in the health and fitness space. You know, there's AI wearables now where you pop your palm out and there's digital readings.
Yeah, I saw that recently.
Very cool.
Did you see the girl that she got the Apple Watch and she programmed her own version on the Apple Watch?
Why are people, like, I love these people.
Yeah.
Where is she?
Did it. Yeah. I'll send it like, to you. I'll send the number. We'll put it in the link. Yeah. There was a girl, you know, the one you're talking about where it's like
the clip.
I don't know if you guys want to pull it up on the screen or whatever, but I don't know. What's it called? Some guy.
It's like a wearable. It's a clip thing. Yeah. And you wear it on your chest and then it reflects.
And you talk to it and then like puts it in the palm of your hand.
Even you can hold.
That's the brooch that's replacing the phone. The people that migrated across from Apple have branched out.
Yeah. And, even like this one you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And even when you, ex-Apple.
Ex-Apple employee makes AI. Let me just say, like, I feel like the marketing for this was good. But what's your opinion? Because you're really adept in marketing and sales. Like, what was your opinion when you saw that?
Look, my opinion will be so different to someone who's not in this space.
But I want your opinion.
That's cool. I'm excited. I'm really excited. I think one thing that I always take from you know, any sort of marketing when it comes to new technology is it's like opening Pandora's box. Like, we're just seeing the start. So that's what it does for me. Whereas, like, I know there's like...
So you're looking at Pandora's box right now. You're like,
yeah, where totally. I'm like, lead? One of the demos was he was holding like 15 grams of almonds and asked, you know, how much protein is in the almonds. And so for me,
I'd have to weigh them on scales. This is kind of scary.
Yeah.
Because I saw that and I was like, because I saw the device, I was like, yeah, whatever. I saw the palm thing, I was like, whatever. But then when I saw it like measuring what he was holding, I was like, whoa.
How much protein is in. And like, so for me in my like health and fitness space, like you could even consider, you know, one day people hate tracking. I can tell you that now as someone that's created a tracking app. People hate tracking. That's why they loved the meal plan feature.
Yeah.
So even hovering over untrackable, tracking your calories, like you don't have to lift a thing. It can just recognize it.
Yeah. Because the guy was like holding like, what was it? Almonds in his hands.
Yeah. Asked how much protein was in it.
And it told him.
That'd be amazing. Cause I find I'm a very bitsy eater. I like to eat lots of things and have a lot of variety. What have
I
had?
I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah. And tracking has always been like 10 grams of this, 2 grams of that.
So true.
And I'm just like, oh, this is ideal for people that like to eat a cup of rice and broccoli and a chicken breast and that's every day.
Yeah, it's really true. But then I know that a lot of other people would see things like that and get fearful. Like I know it's scary. I know it's technology is very scary. I get it too, because I don't know if you guys, do you listen to Diary of a CEO by Steve Bartlett?
Yeah, we're talking about that today.
Obsessed. Anyway, he had an ex-Google employee talking about AI. Did you hear
terrifying.
That?
Terrifying.
Unpack it. I don't know.
He was, he was 50-50. He's like,
Google guy?
Yeah, about AI and where, you know, technology is going because of it. He was sort of like, it can do a lot of amazing things, but it can also be its own worst enemy as well. Mm. It depends on what context it's utilized in. So he was even using like, I think this was the same guy, but using the example of, you know, like setting off like a nuclear bomb or something like that. Like he was just using a lot of examples in bad context, whereas, you know, like everyone thinks ChatGPT has just cut 101 corners for them and it's so positive.
Yeah.
But that's for us as like, you know, the everyday person.
Mm. Yeah. I think there's beauty in it and it's a tool, right? Like a lot of people's argument, it's like, oh, it's a tool. It's not going to replace everything. For me, and again, I'm not as versed or educated on it, but like my opinion was like some neuroscientists were looking at the human brain when faced with a challenge. And what happens in the brain is like, if you're faced with a challenge, you don't overcome it and you don't fulfill that that obstacle. It actually leaves a hole in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time for the neurons to rewire.
You're like a Swiss cheese up there.
Yeah, like a Swiss cheese up there, right? And I know I'm probably butchering
my holes
this.
Are a bit bigger.
I'm going to get like, you know, curated in the comments here. But like essentially what he was saying was that if you overcome that obstacle, your brain literally creates neurons and you adapt to it. You gain experience points in your head and like how to deal with that. My only fear was like, how much is AI going to replace those moments where you can build experience in your brain for problem solving things rather than relying always on this. There she is. But for me, I'm a fence sitter for sure. I'm excited and equally scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that's something that technology will always probably, you know, get me going.
So are you getting ideas though? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel so. And even the, so Ken from Devika, he's my business partner, and they've been doing sort of like VR goggles and things like that for ages. And, you know, so this is like a familiar world for them, but also I think the fact that people are starting to adapt to things that have been, because AI is not new. It's new to us. It's been around
for a long time.
Yeah. So
it's
I think
the metaverse. It's been around since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's that game where Second Life?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or World of Warcraft, you know, they were metaverses. I think what happened with Zuck is, for me, it felt like they tried to go too mainstream too quickly with the whole metaverse thing. And, but for you, like, what's your opinion on AI? Like when you're looking at it optimistically and from an excited perspective, like, where does your mind go?
I think AI is a really great tool. And I think that's a good, you know, label to give it. It's not everything. It's not going to, you know, if you need to learn, it's not going to mask your lack of education or anything like that, but it can help. And I think sometimes help or an assistance and aiding along the way is like sometimes what people need just to get them from A to B. So I like the fact that it's an enhancing tool, you know, like it might write you, you know, a generic essay as a uni student or something, but it's not going to get you an A grade, you know? Right. So I feel like that's what I like about it. Like it can just put someone on the right path, but it won't do all the work for them.
Right. Mm. What do you think are the benefits to up and coming entrepreneurs, the advent of AI?
I think the opportunity. I also think that there's with each new generation that is like born into this technology, it kind of removes barriers. Like if you would have told our parents when Amal and I were building our app, like go create an app, they would have been like, what the fuck? But like Amal and I were like, we're going to go create an app, you know? Yeah. So I think with every new generation, the way that they adapt and kind of inherit the tools as the norm.
And reimagine them. They do such different things with them. That you go, 100%. Oh, interesting. Like currently the move to pull kind of mobiles out of schools, and yet they're kind of a little bit shocked about the way that school children have adapted to using mobiles, taking screenshots of the board, transcribing for notes, all these kind of adaptive ways to use the mobile where they're not sitting there on social media, they're actually using it as a tool for learning and note taking that they've adapted to that we wouldn't.
Like we do at conferences. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
And when you're at a conference, you don't want to write notes anymore. You're like, I'll just take a screenshot of that.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah. Right. And they're kind of like, oh, technology, fearful. Let's like pull it out. It's a distraction. But they're actually using it to enhance and engage with the work. So,
definitely. Look, I am a huge advocate for the 80-20 approach in all aspects of life. Like it was Equilution's motto, like 80% whole food, 20% soul food. And it's pretty much life for me in general. Like I don't think that anything is neither good or bad. I just think everything kind of in moderation. And I think the same about AI. Like if you're going to revolve your whole life around it, it will probably do damage upstairs and to what you can produce and your academic abilities and all the rest. But if you, you know, moderately lean on it and embrace things that, you know, can be benefit to your life. It's
So what would you say to someone like looking at AI that has an app idea and is maybe hesitant to develop an app because they're like, oh, is it going to be obsolete in a couple of years?
I would still say go for it, because knowing the process as to what it actually takes to get something to market and people utilizing it, and then also implementing their feedback, like just starting is way ahead of anyone who hasn't yet come to the party yet. So it's the thing is too, it's like if AI comes into, okay, so say for example, you know, a competitor to Equilution is an AI app, and it can create a customized meal plan, and it can allow you to track your calories, but it won't even allow for you to, it won't even make you put it in. It'll just populate based on digital imagery or whatever it might be. Completely makes Equilution obsolete. There's so many different factors that take time to build in that business that it will not be redundant entirely. Right. And even so, because of what's been built to date, the ability to be able to pivot and be successful on the other side of that through just having, you know, there's like, I think there's like 300 and something thousand followers on Instagram, you know, tens of thousands email subscribers. Like you're not backwards by any means. You've just, you sometimes things force you to pivot. And we had to pivot in that journey as well. Like, premium coaching, which is what we offered at the time. So it was like app, utility with a coach alongside it. So you get your own personal coach and you use the app at the same time. And then people started to want to pay less for you know, that service. So there was a pivot of allowing people just to use the app and paying just for the app, making what was a premium service a low ticket option, which was highly, highly risky, but it's listening obviously to the audience. So I think these things will just, from a business perspective, it shouldn't deter you from starting. It should just make you rethink how you're doing things once you get going.
That's a really interesting perspective. And also I think, like, you know, if you look at branding, right, and I saw Gary Vee talking about this the other day, he's like, you'll never see not really a Google AdWord from Nike.
True. Right?
They don't rely on Google AdWords to get their revenue. They rely on their branding to get their revenue. Whereas another shoe company that's maybe in startup phase that doesn't have equity could make a lot of money on Google AdWords, for example, right? So how much do you think, like, despite AI potentially replacing someone's app, arguably, how much branding plays a role in that? Because it's almost like that's an off-the-shelf Google search kind of outcome versus I really love you as a personal brand. I vibe with your content. So therefore I prefer to use your app anyway.
It's so true. I think that is such a big point. It's sort of like, you know, what you do is really the outcome focused thing. Like, it does this to achieve that. But then how it makes people feel is really the whole branding piece.
This, you know, to achieve that isn't the only part of a business.
No, not at all.
I think it's really important we highlight that, right? Because a lot of people think, oh, okay, AI is here. It can do this and that, done. It's like, well, hang on, you still got layers. You've got like advertising and marketing and branding.
So true.
And like
it's in the same way that I say to my clients, like, marketing is not posting on social media. Boom. Like, you know, it's the same way I say that. I think
we're talking about this today.
Yeah.
Hence the yes.
Should I join the team? Am I hired? Am I regurgitating like stuff that you're saying?
Come here Monday. Like, it's cool.
I will. You can sit in my yellow chair.
We're not exaggerating. We had Fred Shibesta from iFinder come in.
Oh, yes.
Intern.
Yes.
He came in and interned here. He came to work for a day. I'm not kidding.
That's the best.
You're welcome.
Here I come.
It was fun.
I'll sit in his seat. Maybe his smart juice as well.
Yeah, we even did an interview where we like treat him like crap and we're like, you know, go get coffee for us and stuff.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah, but continue, right? Yeah. So like the whole like, okay, I put a post on social media, marketing done. Well, not really.
Why don't I have 400 leads?
Yeah, where's my followers?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so true. So yeah, I think in the same way that that doesn't get the job done, I don't think, you know, just an AI company will do everything that you maybe have been doing for years.
Yeah, great tool. Yeah. Right? It's kind of like we were talking about this. It's kind of like, I guess at this point in time, who knows, God knows where it's going to be in 10 years. But if you look at AI, okay, it's this great system to put information concisely together, solve problems, all the rest of it. It's almost like the equivalent of maybe, would you say, someone who did graphic design, like drawing logos on paper before we had computers. And then we moved to the computer system and everyone's like, oh my God, Adobe is going to replace everyone's jobs.
Yeah, it's like Canva, you know, like just because Canva can do X doesn't mean it's going to replace
graphic design.
You know, graphic design.
Not even close.
Yeah. I always say that to people when they're like, I'll just whip it up on Canva. But the result, you know, and the understanding of you and what we want to try and convey, like, you know what I mean? It's just, there's a lot of different layers. So I totally agree.
I think it'll help with speed and efficiency.
Definitely.
And grunt work and maximizing your output when you know what you're doing. But I don't see AI and ChatGPT as replacing strategy, replacing creativity. It's not going to give you the direction for your business to say, this is who I should target and how I should go about doing it. I just don't see it capable of replacing that.
Yeah, it's kind of like those, you know, the AI avatars that do like customer support and things like that. It doesn't feel like a person.
Have you ever gotten a phone call from AI?
No, not that I know of.
I'm terrified. So it happened to me. It happened to Brad, who works here, and also Jared, where we are like fans of Sabri Subi. I believe it's his company. And, you know, so we're subscribed to his newsletter and we got a phone call from King Kong. And the voice on the phone was talking to me and asking questions. And I was like, there's something off.
Something's
here.
Never.
Something was strange. I didn't quite clue on because I was between meetings and I said, can you call me back another time? And then there was a weird pause and then, okay, we can call in. The voice, the tonality, my radar was just like something's going on.
You're like, we're either in different time zones and countries or this is not, we're not vibing on the same level.
Yeah. And I'm like, did I take something today? Like, what, you know, anyways, then when I caught up with Jared had a different conversation and he said, cause he kind of clued on as well. He said, are you a robot? And then it hung up on him.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah. So like, and then we found out recently that, yeah, King Kong are using AI technology to phone people.
Wow.
So companies are using...
That's a terrible customer experience, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. I'm like, he's always on the cutting edge of things, but the terrifying thing to me was like, should there be a regulation around like AI calling people?
Yeah, so true. But do you know what I think the perspective would be? It would be like, we've got so many, imagine how many leads they would have.
Oh yeah.
You know, we've got so many leads. If we can even just get somewhere with like 20%,
yeah,
it's more than we can get that's with a whole point, right? team. Yeah. So there's probably that.
I'm not against it. I'm like, damn, that's some entrepreneurship. Right. It is. Because this is the 50-50 part of me. It's like, do you want to join the light side or the dark side? And I'm like, I don't know, man.
You know what? It's an A-B test scenario for me. Like, get a group of humans and then get a group of robots and then see what the success is. Like,
you know what I would do? I would make it fully transparent and say, I'm the robot calling from King Kong.
I think that's the best way.
And like, make it fun. Like, actually go, crack jokes. I would be called by a robot. Ha, yeah.
I won't be as funny as you, but I will try.
Yeah. Like,
just kidding. I actually have a great voice.
Play it up. It would be so engaging. And can you imagine how many people you would tell if you were like, I got a call from a robot today.
That's so true.
And this is what they said.
Gosh, should we start another agency?
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk after this because I'm genuinely interested. I'm like, let's join the dark side, but like, let do it ethically, you know, tell people.
Just be transparent. Yeah. This is what we're doing.
We're could write some really great AI jokes, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you pick it up and it just, you clue in that it's not quite human or there's something a bit off, immediately you think scam, dodgy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that doesn't, I don't know how
but
that
but if the ice is already broken and you're not left questioning and querying their authenticity, it's like a different story. Yeah.
You know what would be really fun is like trying to create an AI comedian to do stand up.
Oh my God, imagine how 50-50 it would be. Some people would be like, oh, it's so funny. And some people are like, no.
Have you seen the latest Abattoir?
Abattoir?
No, latest Abattoir.
No, I haven't.
They took footage of themselves when they were younger and they've put it up onto screens.
What's an Abattoir, sorry?
Like, no, Abba.
The band.
Abba, the band. You
know, oh, Mamma Mia. I was like, here Abattoir.
Not like the killing
the animals. The latest Abattoir. Okay,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, the latest Abattoir.
Yeah.
I can see where you got that. Abba. Tour.
That's funny.
Thank you for correcting me. I was like, I feel like an idiot.
They decided they didn't want to go on tour and they're feeling a bit older and they didn't want to kind of do that. And so they took footage of themselves, have recreated them, put them up on screens.
Yeah,
and people are going
crazy
and watching a virtual show they're making toboggans of money off of not even being present.
Yeah, Kanye West did it for Kim. You know how her dad passed away? This is like 5 years ago. He got a hologram for her birthday and the dad came out and was like, happy birthday, Kimberly. Like it was really, really cool.
Oh my God. I don't know if I'd be like angry or like excited that that happened to me.
Yeah. That would send me. Yeah.
Yeah. That would send me for sure.
Yeah.
So like the reason I pulled that example up, right? Like, okay, so this artist, we don't even know what he looks like unless you like Google him. But he wears a mask and everything like that, but he started to integrate AI editing and AI technology and all that kind of stuff into his music, which kind of works because he's this futuristic kind of Daft Punk-y DJ.
Is he the guy that wears...
Yeah, you pull it up.
I think I know which one you're talking about. He went viral, right?
He's getting pretty big. Like he's got... he had another film clip he used AI in.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he actually looks like.
He does like mashups and things.
Yeah, he does mashups, but he like, I think the X factor to him as a personal brand is he sings as he live edits. Cool. And then he also produces. So he's kind of like a jack of all
trades
artistically. But like, I think, I don't know. Like this is where I get excited. I'm like artistically. And then the thing with the Beatles, did you see that?
I was listening to they played it on the radio as well. And the kind of comments flowing in of, oh my gosh, this is so accurate. This recreated what it was like releasing Beatles music for me. And then other people being like, this is so dated and why would you bother? And they're dead and it's creepy. Mm. And just the mixed responses from the outcome of how much people vibed with it was interesting. A place where it scares me with the AI technology is AI models on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
So brand affiliations with AI characters that aren't even real, for me, really kind of amp up that perfectionistic, unachievable, aspirational element of, well, it goes beyond just being a model where only 3% of the population will ever look like that or have that body type into something where they're not even physically possible.
Yeah.
That kind of scares me. Yeah. So there's just that it flips
lots
like
of
pros
options.
And cons, there's opportunity.
Yeah.
It's also a little bit terrifying Depends how you.
That's what I mean. That's why I'm on the fence, because I'm like, one minute I'm like, woohoo, and next minute I'm like, oh, that's horrifying.
Yeah, 100%. I get that.
Yeah. So like, but the cool thing is, back to the point with when you talk about like founders and entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. I think you're right. Never have we ever had so many tools at our fingertips. And you know, when I looked at like social media and when I looked at social media and how that kind of like gave people global access for free.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat, so right? True. Like if you go to our parents, like our mom and our dad, you were talking about this before, they couldn't like go home from their job and like build something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so true. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of opportunities, and like all things, it's how you use it really. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's good people that do good things and there's bad people that do bad things, you know? Yeah. So I think it's like literally how you use it. And I think the control around it is probably the most important thing. And every company, you guys, you know, would know the same, having your company, but there's responsibility from a community perspective and ethical perspective, you know, even things down to like data protection and information, you know, keeping information sensitive and all that kind of stuff. I think everyone's just got to do their part, you know?
Yeah.
Control what you can control.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're in a really good place. Emotionally, spiritually, mentally.
Yes. 30s are good.
Yeah.
30s are good.
Yeah. I'm 33 and I'm enjoying it so far. Yeah. And I'm loving it. What's next for you? What's on the horizon?
Well, I definitely would like to grow my advisory firm, continue to, you know, work with startups and growth companies and invest. Would love to, you know, just see that be my long-term plan for 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond. And then I'll definitely build an app again. So in the health and fitness space, B2B, I've got something sort of in the works at the moment. And then education is like massive, you know, for me as well. So, you know, whether that be courses or just continuing to do things like this that like really, you know, fill my cup up. I really love that. And I feel, given my experience, like a sense of obligation. So I'm excited to become more of like a leader in the business space. I'm sure certainly not where, you know, I want to be, but I'd love to be that, you know, a woman that young business women can, and men maybe, and look to and be like, I would love to do what she's done. You know, I think that would be really cool if I can continue to give tools and resources and things like that, that people can do that with.
Yeah. So yeah, achieve. Would you say that having a personal brand has helped or hindered you in any way?
I haven't really had one. I really have only started doing a lot of things as Jade, not as Equilution, in the last 2 years. Okay. So I didn't sort of piggyback off Equilution as a brand to create any sense of like identity or get followers or, you know, have people recognize me or anything like that. The community knew the founders, but you would never see me in like the marketing. What I eat a day or anything like that. Like I never did things like that.
Did you have a reputation that supersedes maybe the past 2 years and goes back?
No, I mean, I think I've always been the business girl. Okay. Like,
yeah.
I think I've always been that.
But I mean like in mingling in circles, like in networking, people like knew of you and like revered you in a certain aspect.
I think a lot of people knew Equilution.
Right.
Because I even meet people now and we'll say, you know, I founded a company called Equilution. They'll be like, oh, I did that. I did that diet. And they don't know that like I'm the founder. So I think, there's been like a bit of a formation of my own kind of identity after that. I think my stuff with Ice had a lot to do with that. Like when we would podcast, like it was just an opportunity, you know, I was the girl behind the brand, but then to come out and speak, you know, it's sort of.
Are you looking to build your personal brand a bit more now, kind of moving forward?
I think so, because I enjoy what I do and I'm Jade now, whereas I was Equilution before.
Right. So you know? Feel like you were, your identity was really tied up in this business.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, even when I had the agency, I never, you know, hammered at home or anything like that. I was always Jade first and that was how you could find me. Like, so yeah, so I feel as though that was that's sort of naturally how I've progressed in the personal branding space. Look, I don't know where that will go. Like I don't have like aspirations to be the biggest XYZ. I just really love what I do and I want to do more of it. And I think if you're good at what you do, it'll speak volumes. People will listen, you know? So I just want to do more of that.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely killing it.
Thank you.
We really appreciated
you. You're killing it too. I was going to say fangirl, but I don't want to be creepy. But I've been a long time follower. And yeah, no, you guys are doing great things.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Do you want to shout anything out or let people know how they can find you or reach
out
to you?
I think just my Instagram is a good place to start. Jade Spooner, at Jade Spooner. And I think probably by the time this will come out, because it's due in the next couple of days, I'll have a website so you can book a call or something like that.
There we go. Cool.
Yeah. Spooner Ventures and Advisory is my new firm.
Spooner Ventures and Advisory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you have a certain type of individual you're trying to plug into as a founder or kind of
not necessarily. I think my the common denominator between a lot of my clients is either health and fitness space or alternatively technology, like building an app, want to do an app, have an app, want to grow the app, that sort of thing.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I think they're my sort of two schools.
Well, thank you so much. We really enjoyed having you on the couch.
Thank you. That was really good. Yeah.
We'll have to have you on again sometime.
Well, I'm part of the team now, guys.
Hey, that's good. Yeah.
Don't forget my role.
Number one
Monday.
Intern.
Yeah.
Monday. Seriously, come in. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.